Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy birthday.
Hey, I appreciate that. Happy church birthday. I mean, what a great week. Wow. 5 years ago, we got started, and we're going to look today at where God has brought us, where God is leading us. And to do that, I thought there is no better book in the Bible to study this than the book of Numbers. How many people read the book of Numbers? Yeah, so there's one person shaking their head no, all the rest are liars. All right, great, so we're ready to go. Right, let's read this morning from Numbers 13 together with some chutzpah. Here we go. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the large cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites lived near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." A little vocabulary for us. I mean, now you know where the Jebusites live. Does everybody feel better now? Okay, good. All right, so we got that cleared up. You know, 1,826 days ago, 5 years and one day, this community began its first day of worship. Incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible to see what God... We had snow cones this morning. I mean, how good, right? I mean, taste and see that the Lord is good, the psalm says. Right? I mean, God gave a group of people from St. Paul United Methodist Church as well as Buechel United Methodist Church and a number of other churches, about 70 of us, this vision. And really, the vision wasn't anything new. It was something that was quite old. When the Methodist movement began back in the 1700s, there was a man named John Wesley, and John Wesley said, "Listen, if you really want to be Christian, here's what it's all about. It's about two things. It's about loving God, and it's about loving neighbor." And see, he just ripped off stuff that Jesus said, because that's what a good vision does. It just rips off stuff that Jesus says. And so we made the heart of our community about two things, about teaching or learning what it is to be in that relationship with God, and at the same time serving by living out that relationship with God in the life of the world around us. It's not anything new. It's actually quite old. And so we started in the basement of St. Paul, which was still is in the Highlands, with the group. I remember the first Sunday, we had about 25 of us. And from there, we spent about 3 months in study and prayer. And I got a call one day from people who are with the Highland Latin School. And they said, "Hey, we bought this 26-acre campus. It's out on Shelbyville Road. We heard that you're planning a church. It might be a great place to put your sanctuary, and you can rent some space for us." And I said, "Awesome." And so I went out there, and it was interesting. And I remember I told Karen Garner, who's now in real estate, clearly she has learned a lot since that first moment. Well, Karen and I went out there and said, "Hey, this is it, and I really think we can help reshape this thing and remake this thing and turn it into a sanctuary." And she just said, "Yeah, okay, it's going to need some work." And I took Mandy out there, and Mandy was real quiet. And I know that's bad, right? Guys, sometimes you ask your wife, how is this? And they just sort of go, Because there was a moat where the swimming pool used to be. There were raccoons and squirrels living up in the rafters. There was paint falling down from the ceiling. I mean, it looked like something worse than out of a horror flick. But sure enough, people came and they began to scrape paint from the ceiling and repaint the walls and put carpet down. And at the end of that time, we watched the transformation of that building just as God was transforming our community. I'll never forget poor Kendall Spaulding crawled up in the rafters to run a piece of cabling for us. And I can only imagine what he encountered in the midst of that trip. Yeah, I figured you would say something like that. And the first day, we talked about something. We talked about the 1492 effect. And whether you want to talk about Columbus and the great risk that he took to pioneer and leave what was known for what is unknown, whether you want to talk about the apostles in the book of Acts, how Jesus says to them as he's leaving, listen, I'm going to be with you, but I want you to go and make disciples and teach them to obey everything I've commanded you and baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Or you could look at Paul. Paul was sent forth by God to the corners of the world to spread the gospel. There is this pioneering spirit, this 1492 sort of effect that takes over when the Spirit of God moves across a people to leave what is known and comfortable for what is unknown and uncomfortable. And look at what God has done. From 70 people to 140, from 140 to about 175, from 175 to 190, from 190 to about 210, and now on an average Sunday we'll see over 240 people. Incredible. And listen, whether you've been part of this community since the beginning or you're a first-time guest today, we're glad you're here. What we've seen, what God is at work in your own life doing, I believe with all my heart that God has more for us in store ahead. I mean, like Israel, we've gone from nothing to something. And really what we're trying to do is get from here to there. Think about Israel's story. And you can find it if you ever want to read Israel's story. The book of Exodus is a great place to read about it. Exodus is the second book in the Bible. So you turn about, I don't know, a good 50, 60, 70 pages over from the front of your Bible. There you'll find Exodus. And in the book of Exodus, you would read about a people who ended up down in Egypt because there was a great famine in the land. And so what do you do when there's a famine? You go to the place that has the most power, the most resources, the most people. So the Israelites left their little country. They make it down to Egypt. And before you knew it, the Israelites were multiplying, literally. There's some biology going on there. And so the people of Israel grew so big, the Egyptians were worried that they were going to be taken over. And so what do you do when you're about to be taken over? You put people into slavery. Right? Happens all the time. Sure, it looks different from generation to generation, but the effect is very much the same. And so they enslaved the Israelites. They had no land, no property, no home, no power, no position, no wealth. They had nothing. And yet God comes and he says, I'm going to be your God and you're going to be my people. And that's all they needed. That's all they needed. And so God shows up, begins to do miraculous signs and wonders to tell the Egyptians, time to let my people go. And eventually that's exactly what happens. The people of God, they leave Egypt. God leads them out of Egypt. As they're leaving, they plunder the Egyptians. Literally, they take mass quantities of Egyptian wealth, and they're led into the desert by God. And for 40 years, they journey toward the promised land from here to there, from nothing to something, from little hope to abundant promises. God's grace and provision and their grit to follow him. You know what's interesting? We talk about here to there, whether you want to talk about the story of Israel or you think about the story of your own life. You ever notice how people talk lots about there? It's sort of like a Wally World, right? When we get there, kids, oh, it's Wally World. People try to paint a vision of there. They want to talk about there. When we get there, when my finances are all in order, when I'm there, I'm going to be happy and fulfilled and feel wonderful, and there will be children with red balloons running around. Oh! When we get there, in my spiritual life, I'm never going to have any kind of obstacles to overcome. I'll never worry when I get there. Or when I get there in my relationship with my family. You know, my kids, they're always going to be respectful. They're going to say, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir, and it's going to be wonderful. I mean, we're always talking about there. You know, what's interesting, though, as much as we talk about there, we don't ever talk about what it takes to get from here to there. And when we're here, we're stuck. And you know why people don't talk about what it takes to get from here to there? Because it costs you something. Nobody wants to talk about what it costs to get from here to there. We just want to talk about how great there is going to be. Oh, it's going to be awesome. They're going to have snow cones. Right? There is awesome. And whether you want to talk about your job, your relationship with God, your family, your finances, whatever it is, to get from here to there requires some kind of cost. And you know what the cost is all about? One word, generosity. You want to get from here to there in any part of your life, it's going to require some kind of generosity in your life. You've got to give something of yourself to get from here to there. That's what it costs. Well, generosity, wait a minute. 5-year anniversary, let's put some things together. So you're talking about more money? No. You're talking about more time? No. You're talking about more serving? No. You're talking about buying 50 acres of land and putting up a huge building? No. See, that's the problem. Generosity, so often we've reduced it to an action. Generosity is not an action. It is a condition of your heart. And when generosity is the condition of your heart, you will move in your life, in your faith, as a church, wherever from here to there, because you're not interested in this generous action or that generous action. You're interested in the whole of what it is to have the generous kind of heart that propels you from here to there. What does it take? It takes that condition of the heart. It takes generosity. And out of that condition of your heart will flow the time and the talent and the treasures and the service and the relationships and the trust and the belief and the faith and the sacrifice and all that's required of you to get from here to there. So, what has God been doing in your life to get you from here to there? Let's take this opportunity to dismiss our kids to Revolution Kids Church. And this morning, let's team up. One of the questions we try to ask every month or so around here, sometimes more frequently, is where have you seen God at work in your life? Where have you seen God at work in your life? Let's take a few moments, we'll discuss. All right, so lots of good chatter this morning. Where have you seen God at work? Everywhere. That's profound. You're right. Where have you seen God at work?
Here.
Here. Yeah. Where else?
Outside relationships.
Relationships. Nature. Family. South Carolina. Somebody took a trip? Ah, indeed, the shootings. Forgive me. Forgive me. Yes. Amazing to see out of horrible tragedy comes a very amazing and abundant grace. Yes. Anybody else? Got at work? Love it. Phone call and a discussion about things, matters of faith from someone that hasn't been connected with in a long time. Yeah. Ooh.
She was where she was at the time, and she recognized the haircut, and she said, "It's not me, it's divine."
News people saying divine intervention. But they put it on the news. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, there's just a little bias there. All right, so, right. No, it's divine intervention. I'll make it a good thing, Brian. You know, in Numbers 13, I want us to recognize that Israel has been walking through the desert for a period of 40 years. How many people know that's a long time? Yeah, 40 years in the desert. They've been wandering. They've been wondering. The question that if you've had children traveling in a small car, are we there yet? I mean, they had to have asked Moses that at least a billion times. And what happens is both the people and God want there to be a report. There's going to be spies that are sent out into the land. In fact, this is what it says in Numbers chapter 13, preceding the passage that we read. It says, "The Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders." So it's divine action sending people to spy it out, but also people's action. This we read about in Deuteronomy. "Then all of you came to me," this is to Moses, "and said, let us send men ahead to spy out the land for us and bring back a report about the route we are to take and the towns we will come to." Now, people wanting to spy it out, we go, well, of course, because that's how people are. But why would God send people to spy out the land? And I think that the issue is quite simple. God's going to give people a picture of what is to come. He's going to paint the vision of there, but he's also going to find out if people have the grit to get there. I'm going to show you where it is. I'm going to show you how wonderful it is. But here's the deal, Jack and Jill. You have to have the grit. You have to be willing to go. People talk about there. People don't like being stuck here. But the question is, are they going to go? I mean, this is what Moses says. He says, all right, go ahead, see what the land is like. And whether the people who live there are weak, few or many, what kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. Not a bad idea. Jesus said, hey, count the cost of what it is to follow me. Right? Count the cost. No problem with that. But notice I've highlighted for you in yellow, compared to the block of text in white, Moses isn't really concerned about the people and how strong they are. He wants to figure out what kind of land is it? Does it produce good fruit? You know, are there cities that are already existing? What's the deal? And yet when the people come back, what they say is this: we can't go there. We can't do this. They're too strong. They're too big. The Nephilim, which may not be a term that you're familiar with, the Nephilim in the ancient world were thought to be a group of giants. Like, think David and Goliath type stuff. Real big people. Can't do it. To go there hurts sometimes, doesn't it? Can't do it. And clearly, this never happens today. Hey, I got a great idea. Let's go plant a church. Everybody says, I'm in. Fantastic. Let's start a second service. Perfect. Let's do it. I got a great idea. Let's stretch our finances a little bit and let's trust it in faith. Absolutely. Go ahead. How about we move? Oh, sure. Where do I sign? Forgive my dripping sarcasm this morning, but I mean, we're not built for change. We're built for here. God asks us sometimes to go big, but the truth is we'd rather go home. And that's what Israel says. They think home is great. Now, I want you to remember here for just a moment, folks, everything that God had done in the years preceding their 40 years in the desert and their time in the desert. We're talking about God takes down the number one empire in the ancient world. God delivers them. God gives them great wealth as they're leaving. God provides food and water in a desert, which is some kind of trick. In fact, God doesn't allow the sandals on their feet to wear out for those 40 years in the desert. And they spy out the land and say, clearly we can't do this. What? When the spies get back, they say this, or this is the account, I should say. That night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Do you think they want to go back to Egypt? They're bigger. They're stronger. They're going to eat us for dinner. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Come on, folks. The moment we're called to go beyond, to stretch what we know, to stretch from the here to there, it's too painful. And so we close off our hearts to one another, and we close off our hearts to God, and you know what we do? We hoard. Right? You ever seen a Louisville when a power outage is coming? I mean, Kroger. I gotta have more milk and eggs than the neighbor. You know, you see your neighbor who mows his lawn like five times a year, and you don't even think he's got a gas can for the lawnmower. He shows up with like 50 gas cans, right? I gotta have gas, man. We hoard. Our hearts cease to become generous, and they become self-serving and self-protecting. I asked you this morning, have you read the book of Numbers? And for the people who went, I appreciate the honesty there. I mean, it would not be a book that I would say, man, if you ever want to read the Bible, Numbers, that's it. But it's amazing what happens in there. Because the book of Numbers is obviously about numbers. There we go. Yeah, there we go. So if you look at the book of Numbers at the very beginning, what you find out is that there are 603,550 males for the army. There are 22,273 firstborn males for priests to serve God and the people. And you think about the number of resources God has provided not only to leave Egypt, but to be with the people in the desert and to provide for the people of God all along the way. This promise that I'm going to be with you, these acts that God has performed to show that he's trustworthy and true. And what's the response? Sorry, folks, I've got nothing to offer. Generosity. I got nothing to give. They don't need my help. They don't need my resources. Folks, here's the deal. It's never about our circumstances. It's always about the condition of our heart. Always about the condition of our heart. As we think on our own revolution story, let's take a look at this short video to look at a bit of our story from the beginning to about, 18 months ago. So not long ago, we chartered as a church, and in many ways, as we've moved on from that place to now, I think now we find ourselves very much in the same spot as Israel did in Numbers 13. I mean, we think about the faithfulness of God, the fact that we are where we are, that we're growing, that we're reaching other people, that there are a number of different organizations that we work with that work to transform people's lives. You know, as we spy out the land and we think about the ways that we've grown, the staff that we've added, a building location change, new partners that we've worked with, you realize in the last few years we've given over $20,000 worth of supplies and donations to 4th Avenue. Incredible, incredible. I mean, so many great things God is doing in this community. I think about the different ministries that are happening, our development with GO. We support two missionaries, I would say, Pastor Raphael and also Juan and Heather are missionaries to the Dominican Republic who this morning were commissioned because Juan and Heather are leaving for the Dominican Republic and will be there till August. You know, we're starting Upward Flag Football this coming fall. Asbury College comes here about once a month to do a master's degree program right here in this church. Family Scholar House, Burrito Writers. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of all of the awesome things that God is doing. And I think about that in light of the American church. Do you realize that the American church, on average, has 89 people in it? 60% of churches in America are less than 100 people. And if you were to look at the work that God has done in and through this community, you'd realize that of the 850 Methodist churches in Kentucky, you're already in the top 50 in size. Here in the city of Louisville, there are about 55 churches. You're the eighth largest Methodist church. I mean, to think about that in 5 years, all the amazing things that God has done, it's incredible. It's awesome, but that's just here. There's still a there. That's out there. And if we look there, if we look to the promised land, if we begin to dream with God again, I think what it's going to take to get there is a generosity challenge. And we're going to see that in two forms as this community continues to unfold. And the reality is we need more servant leaders in this community. If this community wants to continue to grow, continue to reach more people and new people for Christ, we need more leaders to step up. We probably need double the number of renovation house groups that we currently have. So who's going to lead? Yeah. I mean, you know, as we talk about cultivating the generous kind of heart, how are we going to grow together spiritually? I don't know about the rest of the staff, but I'll tell you what, I think we could use more prayer around here. I don't want prayer to be an afterthought, right? Like you go to those meetings and you go, oh, I guess we should pray. That should be the central focus of what we do. And quite frankly, we have a financial giving generosity challenge to meet. I am grateful for the generosity of all of you who are participating. But here's the deal. Right now we exist in a sanctuary that can seat about 280 people comfortably. When you're 75% full, you're at capacity. That's about 210 or 215. Manthi can check my math here in a minute. And so here's the deal. At our 920 service, now we're averaging somewhere in that 120 range. It's gone from 50 to 120 people. We're seeing this service is averaging around 150, 160, 170, somewhere in there during the high parts of the year, which means that we're about 40 or 50 people from our sanctuary being tapped out. And as soon as you get tapped out, that immediately begins to kill your growth. And so you remember when I said don't get comfortable? I continue to mean don't get comfortable because we are going to have a sanctuary size problem that's on our hands. And listen, I'm not interested in building huge buildings right now. We can't take on that kind of debt, and it's no good for a congregation anyway. But we are going to have to do something about the size here, and it is going to require your generosity. What if we could support not just two missionaries, but five missionaries? What if we could be not engaged with just two great partner organizations, but five partner organizations? I mean, what are we going to do when the time comes to plant the second campus? See, because we're just thinking about here, and I think there's a great big there. And the way that we get there is together. The way that we get there is by being generous with all that God has given us. So if you are generous with your time and your resources, thank you. And if you're not, It's time to step up. It's time to step up. Everybody can do something. Everybody can do something. You know, there's a story about an old man who drives by a cornfield. And there's a young farm kid who's out working, and the old man stops. There's this path between the fields of corn, because that's the way you do corn. I know a little bit about this. I did corn detasseling one summer. It was not a good experience, but that's not part of the story. So the man stands on one side of the path, and the young guy stands on the other side of the path, and he says, "Well, son, all your corn's turning yellow." And he says, "Well, that's good, because we planted yellow corn." And then the man says to him, "Well, you know, you're only going to get about half of the harvest out of these cornfields." And he says, "Well, that's great, because we were only planning on harvesting half of it." And the man was angry at that point, because the kid isn't taking any of his old wise sage advice. And he says, "You're not far from a fool, son, are you?" And the kid says, "No, sir, just on the other side of the path." I'll let that one catch up to you for a minute. The point is this. What was the difference between the man and the boy? The difference was generosity. The man planted nothing. He didn't take care of anything. He wasn't going to harvest anything. And the boy generously gave everything to see it come to fruition. I mean, Jesus tells the same story in Matthew chapter 13. He says a farmer went out to sow seed. And as he was sowing seed, some fell along the path and it produced no fruit. And some fell along the rocky soil and it produced no fruit. And some fell among the thorns and it produced no fruit. But some fell among the fertile fields, where it produced a crop 160 and 30-fold. And the point is this. The point is that the resources in the harvest are God's. It's just our job to generously sow. In this world, there are only two kinds of people. There are producers who generously give, and there are consumers who abundantly consume. What will be your legacy? When it's all said and done, when you stand on that great and glorious day in the presence of God, and God says, "Welcome, I've been waiting for you." You know this follow-up question I think he's going to ask? Now, who did you bring with you? Who did you give generously to? Whose life did you sow generously to with all of the resources that I've given you? What kind of legacy have you left? How many people do you know that could benefit from a community like this one? And have you invited them? How many different partner organizations could we serve with? What missionaries could we support? How could we create a better space for people to come and worship on Sunday morning? What about a second campus that changes lives in a different part of the city? Some people say, "Well, you know, I don't have anything to give." I think that's ridiculous. I mean, I love you, but that's ridiculous. Everybody's got something. I mean, that was the beautiful part about Israel in the wilderness, was that everybody had something to give. Everybody could be part of the bigger whole. And there was time, and there was talent, and there was treasure, and everybody gave something to the life of the community. You know, we say that we work on a one-to-one-to-one-to-one-to-one principle here. An hour for worship, an hour for a group, an hour to serve, one person to invite, and an hour of your paycheck each week. That's a great way, a great look at discipleship. And so I think as we look at Numbers 13 today, and as we think about where we've been, where we are now here, and where God is leading us there, I'm looking for some Calebs. I'm looking for some people who, in the midst of the world that says, "Nope, can't do it, too hard, gonna hurt, cost too much risk," they say, "Yes, we can, because God told us we can." I'm looking for some Calebs who say, in the midst of everybody says, "Oh man, too hard, too difficult, I'm in." I'm looking for the Caleb kind of person who says, despite what the world might tell you, "We can do it." That we have everything that we need right here in this room, and God has abundant resources for us, and God has an abundant plan for us, and let's just simply go and live it out. How do we get from here to there? God's abundant grace and our generous grit. That's how we get from here to there. The promised land lies ahead. And the grit of getting there, folks, comes from generous hearts. Let's pray.